ma'am?
Yes?
I believe we are ready to go, if you can put Mr. Bowling on.
Okay, sounds good.
Hello?
Mr. Bowling?
Yes, sir.
My name is Louis Quinones, and I'm the acting board chair for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. The next voice you will hear is the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and he will be the panel lead for your hearing. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, sir, could you state your full name and agency number for the record, please?
Jerry Donald Bowling.
And your agency number?
81619-081619.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this afternoon in reference to a parole hearing.
Yes, sir.
The board members that will conduct your hearing at this time.
Okay.
The Honorable Louis Quinones, who is our acting board chairman. We have Honorable Gail Rittenhouse, Honorable Michael Johnson. My name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead today. Also in the room, we have a victim's advocate that will be presenting a letter later on in the hearing.
Okay, this letter that you're having...
I don't know. I just know that the victim's advocate here is here with a letter that they're going to read.
Oh, okay.
So that's all I know about.
I didn't know that they're allowed to do all that stuff, bring stuff in that should be in the court, you know?
Okay, well, this is not a court, sir. So this is a hearing board that's appointed by the governor to listen to hearing of parole requests and community service, supervision revocation, that sort of thing. It is not a court of law.
Okay.
We have some decorum we follow, and we follow certain procedures, and there are some issues of due process that we follow, but it is not the same as a court of law.
Okay, I understand.
Okay.
I'm looking at my two last paroles, one in 2009 and one in 2014, and I assumed it would be the same thing as those.
Well, it is still the Board of Executive Clemency. However, no one that is sitting on the board today was on the board during any of your last hearings.
No, I don't recognize any names that I've heard.
None of us were on the board at that time.
Yeah.
So let's get going with this. I'm going to go over some information, basic information about your sentence and sentencing. Then we'll go over a summary of the offense, and then we'll have more of a one-on-one conversation with you. There's no one present in the court or in the boardroom at this time that is here on your behalf. There is the victim's advocate, and we'll go in that order. We'll talk to you, and then we will go to the victim's advocate, and then we'll go back to you for a final statement, and the board will make a decision at that time.
Okay, sir.
Okay, so as I go through this information, the first part of it is based on court records and the sentencing documents and that sort of stuff. So there shouldn't be any issues with that. When I go through the summary of the offense, it was going to be based on information that we have from the pre-sentence report and the Yadkin County Attorney's Office. It may not be accurate as to your thinking, but you will have an opportunity after I've gone through that stuff to talk about it more. Okay?
Okay. I understand.
Okay. So we have other hearings scheduled, so we're going to, for time management purposes, we're going to try to stick with a fairly tight agenda today, okay?
Okay. This new thing you've got today is going to be the first for me. There's a commutation been approved in, 2017? And so it could be my last one, I've been told here, my last hearing.
Well, I don't know about a commutation, okay?
Okay, I guess I've been told this is the last one that I probably have to go to.
Well, this one is for a parole to next consecutive sentence, which, if granted, you would be put on your last 10-year sentence.
I thought they were all run together.
They're all consecutive. They run together in a manner that it's over 60 years.
Yeah, well, it's because it's over 50 years, and it's the one number.
Well, I have no idea where that information is coming from. The information I have is you were sentenced to six consecutive 10-year sentences for attempted child molestation. So let me go on and move on with this so we can get this done.
Okay.
The basic information. So you're currently 86 years old, sir?
That's right.
Okay, you're currently serving a 10-year sentence for attempted child molestation, which began August 20th, 2014. This hearing is for consideration of parole in your next consecutive sentence of 10 years for attempted child molestation, and the certification date was March 20th, 2019. You will become parole eligible. Okay, so if the board was to grant you parole in your next consecutive sentence today, it would not become effective until August 20th of 2019. That's your next eligibility date. They certify early so that we can go through the process, have time for scheduling. So nothing would occur as far as your sentencing goes at all until August 20th, 2019 at the earliest. You were convicted by a jury of six counts of attempted child molestation. You were sentenced to six consecutive 10-year sentences. According to AIMS, they said they were flat sentences, but according to the sentencing documents, they were to be minimum of half of the sentence before you were eligible for parole, so that would be minimum of 5 years each.
The first parole board told me that they could give me six, so it'd be 4.5 years, they said.
Okay, that was sir, this is not the first parole board. This is today's parole board.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And okay. The sentences are according to the sentencing documents that were completed at the time you were sentenced, before you ever had any parole boards, said that you have six consecutive 10-year sentences for attempted child molestation, and that each one of these states that you have to serve a minimum of no less than 5 years. So, in other words, you serve 5 years of a sentence, and then you're eligible for parole if the board should deem it so. Not 4 years, but 5 years.
They told me 4.5 years.
Well, okay.
And that's the first board.
Sir, this is now, and this is what the sentencing documents say. I do not know what was said to you before, but that was quite a while ago, 20 or 30 years ago.
I think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
You appeared before the board 12 previous times. You were granted a parole your next consecutive sentence on July 6th of 1994. Then again on August 20th of 2009, and only another consecutive sentence parole on March 27th of 2014. When you reach your current parole eligibility date, you will have served 30 years in prison on these sentences. The original imposed could have been, if you wouldn't have gotten any consecutive sentence paroles, within 50 years. The maximum according to the sentencing would have been 60 years. Okay, so I'm going to go over, and please, during this part of it, please don't interrupt me. I know that you probably don't really agree with a lot of what the information we have about the offense is, but this is the information we have, and this is the information that you were tried and convicted on. So it seems that you were convicted by a jury, six counts of attempted child molestation. The victim in this case was your natural daughter. You were only charged and convicted of six offenses against your, that were committed against your daughter. However, the trial testimony documented hundreds of crimes committed against the victim over a six-year period. In the addendum to the pre-sentence report, it says that you interviewed the FBI County Jail facility in Prescott. You requested a question about the present offense, as well as information contained in the previous pre-sentence report. You denied the offense occurred, and you claimed at that time that it was all trumped up to aid your wife in seeking a divorce. You also claimed to have been on medication, testosterone, since the age of 18, and you further stated you asked proof of prostate troubles in the 70s by an operator in Pico Rivera, California, and none of that was able to be confirmed because you couldn't remember the doctor's names and that sort of thing. However, the essence of the conversation was that you were claiming that you couldn't have committed the offense because you were impotent. However, details of the offense and everything that was testified to and everything never indicated any of the vaginal penetration. So the denial of impotence being a defense was pretty much not believable. The pre-sentence officer said that his feeling was that you were real dangerous to the safety of community members. Also said that although on the surface you present yourself as an upstanding citizen that has been victimized, these details of the offense tell a different story. Also, it was mentioned that there was a conversation with your sister who stated that you had molested her and then committed sexual offenses against her while you were growing up. So anyway, based on all that information, you were convicted of six offenses against your daughter, and that's what you were incarcerated for. So I'm going to go over a little bit more information, and then we'll get back to you for a little more discussion. Okay, sir?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. So, in the 30 years we've been in, we've had almost no discipline, which is very commendable. And the last one was in 2014, and it was informally resolved, and it was the Ames system has abbreviations which I'm unfamiliar with, so it's a violation of a department, and I think it was department rules or instructions, something to that effect. Apparently not a very serious one. Also, you have regular programming that you've been in, and I didn't see anything involving the STOP program for sex offenders. There was no support. However, we do have a letter from the Ravenpike County Attorney's Office in opposition to any type of release or parole, which was dated March 5th, 2019. And that's where I got some of my information for the offense. Okay, so I have never spoken to you, Mr. Bowman, so I really, you know, I'm not familiar with you. This is the first time that I've had a chance to go over your case when I was writing it up, and as a board, we haven't discussed this case prior. So, I know reading all this that there's probably some things that you don't agree with. So I'm going to ask you a pointed question to get started. Okay?
I'm listening.
Okay. It's a very low question. And it is, do you still claim that you didn't commit this offense and that it was out of setup?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. So, Can you give us a little bit of information about what was going on back then and what this was all about?
Well, not with the world listening.
Okay, well, it is a recorded hearing, and it is public information. Under the Arizona open meeting law, that's the way we have to conduct these hearings. So everything that is said is recorded, and it is public information that anybody can get easily to a public information request.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to talk about it, that's going to be, you know, it's entirely up to you, sir.
It'd be fine. There's no problem. I was working for an organization in law enforcement that doesn't want me, telling the world about the situation. And it's already been sent to the Yavapai County attorney, a lady that was acting there. What was her name? I forgot now. And one of the judges. And I'm sure that letters, I wrote letters to two letters, and I'm sure they have the letters in their file.
Okay.
That tells the details of what happened here and how I was framed and railroaded.
Okay. So
you have anything there about the United States federal agent showing up at the prison and telling me and the warden, who is today Charles Ryan, the director, and he sat us both down at the table and said, "Mr. Bowling, you were framed." I said, "Yeah, I know I was framed, but why am I in this prison?" And he said, "Well, they railroaded you to cover their liability." I said, "How long have you been working on this case?" He says, 30 days, as I remember. That was 1990. And so that's a long time ago to try to remember word for word. But anyway, he made a remark to the warden, that was Charles Ryan at the time, who's today their director, that he should tell his superiors and remove me from the prison. He said, "This man is innocent." And he was telling the truth. He was a federal agent with the State Department.
Well, why would they frame you?
Why did they do what?
Why would they frame you so that you went to prison?
Well, the woman that was working for me, taking care of my kids, because I had custody of my two children and a divorce, and the lady that was working for me wasn't exactly a hero. She was a target for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And she ended up with a birthday party that was given in her honor, and her girlfriend and her escorted me to a wedding chapel after I'd been drugged, and I ended up married to her. Or at least that's what I was told the next day. I tried to get the paperwork back from the wedding chapel, and that was too late. They'd already filed it. So several months later, or several years later, what, 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it is, long time to try to remember daily. But anyway, I finally told her, I said that as soon as Jerry graduates from high school, we're going to end this mess. And that's the way it ended. When he graduated, I was going to file for divorce. She framed me and railroaded me, had help from a small town marshal. And, of course, he probably didn't know the truth about what was really going on. So, I'm being very, I'm not giving you details word for word, but I'm giving you enough that you no doubt probably know some of it.
Well, sir, in 30 years, I think that, especially if that federal agent comes to the prison and tells you that you've been framed and tell the warden you've been framed, that somewhere down the line in the Court of Appeals or somewhere, somebody would have gathered enough information to overturn your convictions.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
I would. And I would think that, based on the appellate information for him to end the file, but there's a lot missing in this. I know there's an affidavit from, I think it was your stepson, talking about he supposedly was told by your daughter that you didn't do it and that it was all lies, but it seems to me that there's an awful large conspiracy going on here with the number of people that were saying that you had done these deeds, and they had enough information in trial, and then, you know, the appellate courts and everyone else believed that you committed at least six of the atrocities that you were accused of.
Yeah, I've got the affidavit in front of me here. Do you happen to have any of the paperwork that I filed with the last parole in 2014?
Well, I've got one thing here, but that's why I'm talking to you, is trying to get this straightened out as to, you know, I mean, what I don't understand is, with all of your claims as to what happened, and especially if you had a federal agent from the State Department that was backing up your side of the story, why are you still in prison?
Yeah, I shouldn't be.
Why does anybody else believe any of that?
Yeah, I say I shouldn't be. Have you talked to the federal agent?
No, we don't talk to federal agents. This is your program, and anybody that you would like us to talk to, other than you, means, you know, on your side, you need to inform them to be at the hearing.
Well, the chairman of the board, of this board, at my parole hearing, informed me that she talked to the State Department, and yes, the federal agent was there. And I'm looking at a letter here I got from, his name is John Hallahan. And he says, I'm in receipt of a letter dated January the 12th, 2009, addressed to Director Ryan regarding the parole board. The director's office has forwarded your letter to me that I may respond on his behalf. Basically, what he's saying is Mr. Ryan's not allowed to come in and testify about what happened back in that meeting with the federal agent at the prison in Winslow. And I wrote this note, I took this letter and I wrote a note on here, and it says to the parole board, this is my note. I'm looking at it and reading from it. The release date is wrong, and then a note by Jerry Bowling on August the 10th, 2009 to the parole board. My sentences are 4.5 years each. Also the note, during my incarceration in 1990 and 1991, a U.S. federal agent with U.S. Department of State came to Winslow Prison, Kaibab unit, to visit with me, telling me and various people, including my warden, Charles Ryan, that I was framed and railroaded, his investigation had proven. I asked Director Ryan to inform this parole board. His subordinate says he cannot report to the parole board in my favor or to admit that it's true what the U.S. federal agent told myself and Warden Ryan. I went on to say there I was given six sentences. The reason the grand jury only approved three sentences, actually four, and they throwed one out 45 seconds before the trial started. That left three, and just before the trial started, 45 seconds, I put on a note, and my lawyer and the prosecutor were talking, and I said, we're going to try. He said, why don't you just plead to one of these three sentences here, and we'll just send the jury home. I said, no, we've been fighting this thing 2 or 3 years, we're going to go to trial. And he says, well, if you don't plead to one of these three, I'm going to double them. I says, well, the grand jury says there's only three, and that's not even accurate. There's nothing. There's nothing here. I'm as innocent as Christ in heaven, the one that read about it in the book, the holy book. So we went to trial, and they released two jurors once because they was in the hallway talking about how innocent I was. So they let them go. And then the trial lasted almost 2 weeks. About 4 or 5 days later, the same thing happened in the bathroom. This deputy town marshal, small town, little village, had this this marshal. He went in and tried to get them to, they were talking at the sink. I was sitting in the commode, and the cop was in another commode. We came out together and seen each other. We both heard him make remarks to each other about how I wasn't innocent, how I wasn't guilty of anything as innocent, which is true. But when we got back into the trial, they had a sidebar and they released those two.
Well, sir, that is exactly the way our system is set up. Jurors are not supposed to discuss the case until it has been given to them to discuss. And so if somebody overhears them, it doesn't make any difference whether they're saying they're innocent or guilty or what. If they're discussing the case, it's a violation of the rules, and they're supposed to be dismissed.
You're absolutely correct.
I know. Okay, so you didn't get to hear them say that, so then, you know,
there's
no
violation.
Sir, let me explain something. I have the sentencing documents. They were dated October 3rd, 1990, and there are six charges. They're all related one to the next as far as they're consecutive to each other. And each one of them states that the sentence is 10 years and the defendant shall not be eligible for release on any basis until he has served not less than one half of this term. That's 5 years. That's not 4.5 years. That's 5 years. So
no, that's accurate. I remember reading it.
Okay, but you just told me that your sentences were only 4.5 years apiece.
Well, I was repeating what that parole board told me.
Sir, this is not that parole board.
No,
I don't know who the chairman or whether they would make an attempt to contact the State Department or not. But if, you know, just like right now, you know, if you want somebody to appear at a hearing, it is you as the inmate's responsibility to have those people contacted and ask them to show up at the hearing. It's not a court of law, so they can't be subpoenaed and forced into appearance. They can be asked and they can say yes or no. Alright, so
everything you've told me,
there's nothing to document it. The same as it was nothing to document what you gave the pre-sentencing officer about doctors treating you for impotence. Nothing could be verified. This is something you can't verify, so we have to consider this hearsay.
Well, the doctor is deceased, and the remark that I made, and Dwayne Belcher was with me for, 20-some years at these parole boards, and one of the members of the board, a lady, she says, "Well, Mr. Bowling, maybe you think we didn't check." Well, we checked, and I says, "Well, you checked on what?" So we checked with what the federal agent told you. And this.
So if that's what you think happened, then it might be advisable that you request a copy of the transcripts of that hearing and then supply them to the current board so that we can see what was said, because other than that, we have to take it as hearsay, because it sounds way out of the realm of what the board normally does, but I can't speak for what happened that many years ago. But
can I make a personal remark to you?
You can make a personal remark.
Okay, I understand that the governor, I think it was a lady called Brian Brewer, she fired the entire parole board for, I guess they unanimously ruled that they wanted me on the street. And she said I went to the State Department and the federal agent did show up and we did interview him. And for that reason, this board has decided we're going to parole you. So, and that lady told me, she's right under a doctor, I think he's a doctor, PhD, Dwayne Belcher Sr., and that was on the 2009, I think that was the one. I've ended so much of this stuff, it's hard to say, but I'd be happy to have a transcript furnished. I'd like to have a copy myself, and I didn't even know I could get a copy. But I'll get a copy for you and forward it to you, sir.
All this stuff is public information, and it's reported, and it, you know, should be transcripts, including anything Governor Brewer may or may not have said back then. But I have to base what I'm doing on the information that's been supplied to the board, and then what you tell us, and what we hear from victims and other supporters of yours, if there would have been any here.
Well,
the board has to make a determination based on that, and it's it boils down a lot of times to the preponderance of the evidence, which means that they're more likely to have or have not been that way.
Well, I'll be happy to have the transcripts sent to you. I'll even go further than that. I'll try to get your name again.
Has all this information that you got about this, have you presented that to an appellate court as a basis for appeal? Because it sounds to me like what you're saying would be the basis for an appeal, irregardless of any denials or granting of post-conviction relief you've had in the past. The new evidence or evidence that hasn't been presented, things like that, are usually grounds at least to present it to an appellate court to see whether they're hearing the whole case or whether they're going to deny your opportunity again. And with what you're saying is way, way, way beyond the scope of the executive board of clemency. It is under the perusal of the court system, not the parole board. And we cannot get rid of your sentence. We cannot put you out on the street, without sufficient information to convince us that the community is going to be safe if we let you out there, and whether it's in the best interest of justice or not. And all that information for the board is based on what we do today and the information we have today, not a bunch of information that should have been presented to an appellate court years ago.
I hope that you have taken into consideration. I don't tell lies. I've been a notary public in California since 1958.
Okay, well, sir, I have never known a liar that admitted to being a liar. They always say they tell the truth. So I appreciate your candor and everything, but your statement that you never tell a lie is a good statement, and I would hope it's true. But all the information you're giving us today has gone through, grand jury, a trial jury, and one or two appellate systems. And so unless you can tell them anything that you've told us today about this being framed and the State Department agent coming in and saying that in the prison, which I absolutely can't imagine that happening.
That would be
a violation of every policy of operational policy that the State Department has.
Well, it happened, and that federal agent is still working for the government. When he left the U.S. State Department, the President of the United States appointed him as a representative for NATO.
Okay.
And I got such a mess when I was convicted. It was such a mess. This federal agent told his family, and his entire family came to Arizona to visit me. they couldn't believe what the federal agent was telling them. It was so bad.
Okay, sir. We're getting way beyond the realm of hearsay.
Thank you for listening.
Now with that last statement, I think we need to move on. And I'm going to see if my fellow board members might have any questions at this time. Mr. Colonis.
Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Mr. Bowling. Yes, sir.
Just a quick question.
I beg your pardon?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What interest did the State Department have in you? Why the State Department?
Well, the State Department was because the federal agent that was visiting in the area was to find out what was going on in this mess, and they'd heard, because I'd made a remark to somebody of what's going on, and I didn't know they had a federal agent in the State Department in that group of friends, and they did, unknown to me, and the federal agent showed up, and he stuck his nose into everything. And I guess that's the same federal agent that showed up at the prison in Winslow.
And you didn't answer my question. Why the State Department?
Well, because this person was a federal agent at the State Department.
No, you're not answering the question. And I don't think you understand anything about jurisdiction. The State Department has very little law enforcement jurisdiction in the United States, probably limited to, like, passport fraud. The majority of them work in security outside of this country. So, my question again is, why did the State Department have any interest in you?
Well, I guess it's because a family member that I'd made a remark to and knew that there was a federal agent involved in the family.
You're not making any sense, sir. I have no further questions.
Any other questions from the board? Okay, Mr. Bowling.
Yes, sir.
There's no other questions from the board at this time, so I am going to defer to the victim advocate. I believe she has a letter she wants to read. And then once that's done, I'll come back to you for a final statement, okay?
Okay.
Hello, my name is Carrie Garrison, and I am a victim advocate for the Department of Corrections. I do have a letter from the actual victim, Michelle. This letter is in regards to Mr. Jerry Bowling, ADC 081619. And before any decision is made today, you must know the impact your decision will have. Mr. Bowling tried to silence me, like all his other victims, a lifetime of victims. I will not be silent, and I will never stop trying to prevent Mr. Bowling from hurting me or anyone else again. I will fight to my very last day, if that is what it takes to ensure Mr. Bowling remains in your custody. The abuse I suffered from Mr. Bowling became an inextinguishable fire I have in my heart and my voice to make sure I remain his last. At 16, I became a survivor, no longer Mr. Bowling's victim. At 16, I said no more will I be silent. No more will Mr. Bowling abuse me or another human being again. Years later, now an adult, I am saying no more. When I was younger, he made me believe that telling his dirty secret, I would be in trouble, I would go to jail, I could die. Mr. Bowling, even behind bars, tried to continue to make me his victim, and each time I handled it with authorities. You will see in his records in 2003, he was disciplined for writing me letters and a card addressed to, quote, his wife. Before this, he sent me a copy of a photo of him with a little girl on his lap behind bars. During trial and even after he was sent to prison, he used his family to track me down and tried to bribe me to help get him released. He tried every way possible to track me, forced me to live in a prison on the outside, forcing me to constantly be guarded, trust no one, and take every step possible to never be tracked down like a hunted animal again. Mr. Bowling took my innocence, my childhood, my family. Every day is a healing process. I will spend the rest of my life healing from the hell Mr. Bowling put me through. There is nothing to go back to. He took it. There will never be a normal. He ensured it. All I have is each new day to rise up, heal a little more, and thank God for blessing me with my children and my husband. I will never know what it is to have a father and mother hold me, love me, comfort me, be grandparents. He took it. I will never know what it is to share my life with my siblings or my children, to have uncles and aunts from my side, because he took it. Siblings I grew up with, we don't know how to be siblings. And the abuse and pain Mr. Bowling caused to I and them is so great that at least for me, it's too painful to even be in the same room. Don't let Mr. Bowling fool you. As long as you keep him, no child will ever have to be scared, to go to sleep scared, to stay awake and ask God routinely to make it all stop, as I did. No child will be threatened with death, intimidation, and groomed for his dirty little secrets, as I was. Mr. Bowling is and always will be a monster, the devil himself. Mr. Bowling is a child molester, child pornographer, unthinkable abuse. I cannot relive the life again and again. I pray that you, Justice, forever be his keeper. Please do not let this monster unfurl. Thank you. And she did also want me to mention that the inmate was granted parole at the last two hearings after only being serving 5 years for each of those 10-year sentences. And she would really like to see him have to complete a full 10-year term because he just keeps getting granted parole quickly.
Hold on, sir. I have a question here for our victim's advocate. Were there letters during the past hearings?
I don't know, because there was 2014, so I'm not sure if there was anything previously.
I've never heard that.
Mr. Bowling, please be silent. You will have another opportunity to talk when it is your turn.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I just want to know if there was representation.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board? I would like to see what Mr. Bowling's comment was there before we go into the final statement. Mr. Bowling?
Yes, sir.
What was that you were trying to say?
I was trying to ask you about it. I'm looking at some affidavits. Somebody said there was only one affidavit from a stepson, and...
I said there was an affidavit from, I believe it was your stepson. I didn't say that was the only thing. I just mentioned that one.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm looking at an affidavit here from the wife of that stepson, and he's talking, I'm going to hand it to the lady here I'm sitting here with. She can tell you what's on it. She called the prosecutor and said, Mr. Bowling's daughter is here, my husband's sister, and she's living with us because she's trying to get away from the woman that was Mr. Bowling that put him here, and he's an innocent man. And I'm going to hand the affidavit to this lady here, Bill.
Let me explain something to you.
Okay.
I believe I saw that affidavit, but the point is that's really after your convictions. And the other thing, I have a real problem believing that your daughter, whose letter was just read, would continue this conspiracy to frame you so that her stepmother could get a divorce from you. Why would she carry that on for 30 years?
Yeah, well...
And the other thing is, sir, I do know that during the investigation, there was a bag full of photographs given to the investigators by your family members that had pictures that had been... In those days, I don't know if they had Photoshop, but they had been manipulated with your head, and the head of your daughter were placed on the bodies of people that were doing sex acts in pornographic pictures. and there were a whole lot of them.
Well, that...
You've also alleged that you made your daughter watch porno, and then you forced her to do the same things to you that they were doing in the movies.
Okay.
And then, after you were in, you sent letters that had, you know, a picture of you with a, you know, with a young child on your lap, which apparently was another manipulated picture. But that's, you know, even if it was a real picture, and you weren't doing anything as a violation, because you know, once you were convicted of a sex crime, you're not supposed to be on anybody under the age of 18. So there's a lot of things here that keep getting, you know, kind of more or less passed over, but it all piles up. And like I said before, you went to, there was a grand jury, then there was a trial jury, and there was, I believe, at least two appellate hearings. And out of all four of those, everybody came up to the same conclusion, that you had committed some crimes against your daughter. And you were convicted and sentenced to 10 or 6 consecutive 10-year sentences. Okay? So, a lot of this other stuff, if it is true, you should have brought it up in front of an appellate court, because if you were framed or whatever, you know, the parole board cannot get rid of any of what's happened. Okay? We can't change what the courts said.
Well, can I?
Okay, wait a minute. So at this point in time, before the board goes into discussion to make a determination about your request for parole, we're going to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Tell us anything else you think is relevant to our decision. We just ask that you don't repeat all the information we've already covered, and realize that we have other inmates that have hearings scheduled today.
I understand. Anyway, should I speak now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this affidavit, a while ago, you said the affidavits are way after the trial. Here's an affidavit before the trial, and that's where the girl was trying to tell the truth that her stepmother had put her into this situation. And can I hand this lady this one-sheeted affidavit? And it's signed by Julie Evans, and she's talking to the prosecutor.
But we already have it, sir.
You already have it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's dated 12/26/91, and that was signed afterwards. But the affidavit tells you that she called down to the prosecutor's office and told him what was going on. And he said, oh, just don't worry about that. Anyway, it's just one thing after another like this. And I will be happy to get a transcript. If you'll give me the details, exactly what you want on the transcript, and where I can get the transcript. Where do I get it? Where do I pay for it? Or how do I get it?
Well, you can look in your CO3, but you would get transcripts of the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency from the Office of the Board of Executive Clemency.
I
the exact process. So I say you can work with your CO3 and get the information to how exactly you would do it. It's a, you know, freedom of information request, and I don't know the process. I don't work in that part of this area. I work on the board.
Oh, I understand. I'm working with a completely new board, and I don't recognize any names.
Okay, well, I can guarantee you none of us were here during your last hearing.
No, I know. I understand.
Okay.
Maybe I should have sent a lawyer up there to the board to meet.
That's all up to you, sir. Okay, have you finished your final statement, sir?
Well, there's nothing else I can say because I'm trying to be brief. You didn't have time. I've got a lot to say, but...
Okay, well, that's the second or third time you put words in my mouth, sir, and I really don't appreciate you. I didn't tell you to be brief. I said that, you know, that we have other people.
I know I'm trying to recognize what you said and respect what you want me to do.
So if that was your final statement, I thank you for it, sir, and we'll be going into discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. We won't be addressing you. But we ask you to stay on the phone. You're entitled to hear the whole conversation, but remain silent. After we've made a determination, I'll get back with you, okay?
Okay, and you want me to, can I say one more thing, sir?
What would that be, sir?
Can I have the federal agent, if I can find him, and make a statement to you by phone call or statement?
Certainly, sir. Well, would you have to send the information in to us so that we have it and we can make a phone call to do a telephonic...
To
appear at the board and make a statement on the board, as long as we've got the information to call him and he agrees to it, that's perfectly fine.
I hope he'll agree to it. Can you give me your full name, sir, and I'll have it sent to you?
Well, you need to have it sent to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, 1645 West Jefferson in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, I'll have him some way if I can.
Okay, well, that's fine, sir. Okay, so the board's going to be in a discussion now, and...
I'll keep my mouth shut.
Okay, thank you, sir. Board's now in discussion. Well, to say the least, it's a very interesting situation. There's a lot of information here that, like I said during the hearing, it's bound to a grand jury, a trial jury, and I believe two appellate reviews. And it's already been upheld all the way through. The mention of a federal agent, I think I understand what he's trying to say. Somebody who knows how a family member with this federal agent got rid of what was going on with him and decided to do his own investigation. And that person decided that he had been railroaded, and that it apparently wasn't going anywhere from there. I would actually like to talk to this gentleman and find out, not only what he found out, but what he did with that information. So, I'm not in favor of any type of prayer or release for Mr. Bowman at this time, but I'm willing to listen to discussion from my fellow board members if there might be any. No discussion. Okay. So, based on all the information we've had given to us today, and the discussion around that information in reference to Mr. Gary Bowen, ADC number 081619, I am going to deny Mr. Bowen of Baldwin's next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge at this time. All six of the crimes that he was sentenced to, the date of offense were dated on November of 1987 or later. So I'm going to ask for earlier setup.
A second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, second by Mr. Rubenhaus, by Mr. Johnson, and Mr. Kamenos. And the reasons would be that it was serious need with offense, trauma to the victim, age of the victim. And based on everything we have, I'm going to say with the harassment and everything, since the charges only included one victim, I won't do that multiple times. The programming, release plans irrelevant at this time. No family or community support, unless there's something else. Okay. Mr. Bowen.
Yes, sir.
Okay. The board has unanimously voted to deny you a parole to your next consecutive sentence or an absolute discharge. You will, in approximately a year, be recertified by Department of Corrections for another hearing. And I say in approximately a year, I'm not sure that they will certify you this much in advance. So sometime between now and August of 2020, you'll be certified for another hearing. If you have somebody, like your federal agent, that you wish to come and testify on your behalf, family, anybody like that, that you would like to have come testify, you are more than welcome to notify them, and they can appear personally, or they can do it telephonically, if you supply the information to the board before the hearing.
Okay, yes, sir.
You understand?
I'm going to try to get the federal agent to make...
Okay, sir, that's fine, you made that point. So, this will end your hearing, and please put the CO3 back on the phone.
And I'll have it sent to the, at 1675 or 45?
1645.
1645, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.